Moses, and then he said, when one properly sees, that in all activities, no other performer is at work than these modes of nature. And he knows the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to all these modes. He attains my spiritual nature. The Prabhupada says, by the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master living as he can know of his spiritual position, that is, nature as a spirit soul, his material body, his senses, how he is entrapped, and how he is under the spell of the material modes of nature. He is helpless being in the grip of these modes. But when he can see his real position, then he can attain to the transcendental platform, having the scope for spiritual life. Actually, the living entity is not the performer of the different activities. They're being carried on by... He's forced to act because he's situated in a particular type of body, conducted by some particular mode of nature. So one has to stand that, understand that. Understanding that, he becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness, and then he's not controlled by the spell of the material mode of nature. Stated in the 7th chapter, that's 14, one who surrenders to Krishna is relieved of those who can cross beyond. So Krishna continues, when the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this body. So then, Arjuna asks three questions. First, what are the symptoms of a person who is transcendental? This word, transcendental, which we use over time, means beyond the three modes. Transcend means to go beyond, but precisely means beyond the three modes. So what are his symptoms? What is his behavior? How does he live? What are his activities? And three, how does he do it? So it's very clear there's three questions. By which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the mode of nature? Then Krishna answers the three questions. In the following verse, which is four verses written together, he answers the first question according to Prabhupada in the purport. Up until we get to the line, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, those are, at that point, you're dealing with behavior, whereas the first part of his qualities. So he says, the first thing is, he has no attachment nor any aversion to prakasham, as he has no aversion or sampravritani and nirvritani. He does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, nor long for them when they disappear. So he has no attachment attraction or aversion for the any other mode of nature. That's the first symptom of one who is transcendental to the modes. This means what Prabhupada talks about here, he says, the qualities of the material modes in the body will act. One has gotten under the modes of nature a certain kind of body and a mentality also that goes with it. He says that those will act, but as spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activity. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. In other words, his real position is that his neutral to all three manifestations of the modes. Because in any case, they don't affect it. It's not affecting self sometimes. So we can understand this in terms of devotional service. It may be necessary for the service of the Lord to act in goodness, passion, or ignorance to do those particular jobs that are situated with those modes, or even to be psychologically in such a state. That's what one is doing for the service of the modes, doesn't care. And that's what he's doing for the service of Krishna, he doesn't care. But the consciousness is actually not affected. One can be Krishna conscious, even though the body and the mind may be acting in a different way. So it says here, does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, nor long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. Who is situated in the self in regards alike happiness and distress. So when one becomes transcendental, a person endures happiness the same way he endures distress. It's something else to be put up with. That's all. Who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, a piece of gold with an equal eye, and who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable. So these are the things. Those are his, that's his characteristics. The next question, Prabhupada says in the purport, concerns the dealings of a transcendentally situated person. A materially situated person is affected by so-called honor and dishonor according to the body. But the transcendentally situated person is not affected by such honor and dishonor. So his that person's social dealings or his conduct is aloof from these. He treats alike both friend and enemy. Equally disposed, sees everything on an equal level. Social and political issues do not affect him. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self, he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated. So those are the looks like the actual dividing line here, if you want to reverse the second, who looks upon a lump of earth or stone. Prabhupada has that in the section of behavior. Let's see, where is that? Yeah. Regards alike, happiness and distress. That's really where it is. Behavior, you go from this quality to behavior. That's where the okay. So this is Arjuna's description. Krishna's description here of someone who is transcendently situated. Of course, it's a little strange because for people who are in the beginning process of Krishna consciousness, because in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we actually expect to see development of mode of goodness, so one may become in the beginning attached to the mode of goodness and averse to the mode of ignorance and compassion, because one is trying to get oneself, and you should be, because one should try to be getting oneself in a situation. When one is actually transcendentally situated, then the consciousness is so aloof and entangled, just like a pure witness to the activities of the material body and mind, that doesn't affect it one way or another.
This is just a comment. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I was already teaching a different form of yoga. I was an actual teacher. And the teacher, he always exhibits serenity, peacefulness, lucidity. And therefore, I couldn't understand Prabhupada. I thought, he gets angry, you know. He's got sick. And I just couldn't understand Prabhupada's complete mystery. Because
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Because one can do that, for the Prabhupada, Prabhupada said to the sacred Krishna, you can become angry, you can become violent, and you're transcendentally situated. You're not entangled with that anger and that violence. So for example, Prabhupada taught us that cleanliness is next to godliness, and everybody should very mechanical and very clean. But then also sometimes we read about really great spiritual people like certain Babaji's, you know, Lord Shorter's Babaji used to chant where everybody went to pass stool and so on. Eat out of the skull, all these kinds of activities. That doesn't mean that he's dirty. Different kind of position. So now, anyway, those two questions. Any questions about those two verses? This is his description of someone who is really detached and aloof. So now in text 26, he answers the third question of Arjuna. How does one get out? How does one transcend the modes? This, of course, the famous verse, Mamchyo Vyabhicharena, Mottibhidhina Sintate Sagunam Sintichayitam Brahmabhuyaya Kavite. We get out by this way, by unflinching or unfailing or unflagging devotional service. When one can do that, unfailing in all circumstances, then Sagunam Samiti Chaitan, he overcomes or he goes beyond these gunas, and Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, he becomes elevated to the platform of Brahma. This Brahma Bhuyaya is equality toward Krishna in the sense of becoming Brahman. Then, of course, in text 27, then Krishna says, Brahma no hi pratishtaham. And I am the basis of this Brahman. Pratishta means foundation, support, basis. This is one of the best verses ever for using, I guess, Mayavada philosophy. Brahma no hi pratishta aham. I am the pratishta of Brahma, the basis, foundation, support, resting place. So you come, he said, now what they say is that already in the third chapter, in this 14th chapter, Brahman has been defined as the total of material nature. So when he says Brahma no hi pratishtaham, he's referring to that Brahman that's mentioned. Remember we talked about that in the beginning, the Pradhana is called Brahman. But the answer to that is if you look at 26 in connection with text 27, 27 in connection with text 26, it follows immediately, hard upon it. He's saying, you come to the level of Brahman, and I am the basis of that Brahman, which he then describes, imperishable, mortal, eternal, constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So why, after mentioning Brahman in one verse, and then saying, and I am the basis of Brahman, when he suddenly switched back to another? It doesn't make sense, so it's really a strained interpretation to get along without this. So here, this is Krishna's answer. We get a little more the same thing. Answer the same thing in this 11th chapter, where there's a contrast is given. Between where here you notice Krishna mentions here, when he mentions these three states, it should be understood, this is text 20 in the nature of God, it should be understood that alert wakefulness comes from the mode of goodness, sleep with dreaming from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. The fourth state of consciousness pervades these three and is transcendental. So Krishna consciousness actually exists and is present within all three phases of awareness. So that a person who's fully Krishna conscious is actually Krishna conscious while awake, while dreaming, and while in deep dreamless sleep. That's why Prabhupada said, engage in Krishna service 24 hours a day. But even in deep dreamless sleep, there's no break for Krishna consciousness. So that consciousness of Krishna, that awareness, so in one sense, a pure devotee does not lose consciousness. And that the sleep is more like a trance than it is like a normal effect of sleep. That's the difference between the mode of goodness and transcendence. When you're transcending, you're awake even when you're asleep.
So there's no ignorance.
There's no ignorance. See, right now, that Krishna consciousness is the natural attribute of the soul. So that Krishna consciousness is always there, but we are suffering from a displacement of consciousness, or what you might call a false consciousness. And so that Krishna consciousness is dim. And as we advance, Krishna consciousness comes up brighter and brighter. And for a materialist, at best, God is like the dim, unseen background of their experience. One becomes Krishna conscious. Krishna is the foreground of all experiences. So there's not a transaction in which, of the senses in which Krishna is not involved. And one is conscious of that involvement. That's what's meant by Krishna consciousness. Krishna gives a hint of that when he says, I am the taste of water. I am the original fragrance of the earth. And when, so people have asked Prabhupada, have you seen God? He says, not only have I seen God, but there is never a time when I am not seen. And he said, you have also seen God. Haven't you tasted water? Haven't you seen the sun? Haven't you seen the moon? So they're not recognized. He's actually there, but they're not recognized. So they're not Krishna conscious. So when the Krishna consciousness is there, that's what it means. It means the consciousness of Krishna. That consciousness which is always attached to Krishna, which is fastened on tight to Krishna's lotus feet, is there in all states. You'll never forget Krishna. Then he gives a more contrast. Those who leave this world in the mode of goodness go to the heavenly planets. I'm on text 22. Those who pass away in the mode of passion remain in the world of human beings. And those dying in the mode of ignorance must go to hell. Three destinations, upper, middle, and lower planets. But those who are free from the influence of all modes of nature come to me. So there's a distinct, difference. If you're in the mode of goodness, and that's all, the best you can achieve is Brahmaloka. Then skipping text 23. Oh, 23 is interesting. Work performed as an offering to me without considering the fruits is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Work performed with the desire to enjoy the results, the mode of passion. And work compelled by violence and envy in the mode of ignorance. And then the purport. Ordinary work performed as an offering to God without desire for the results is understood to be the mode of goodness. Whereas activities of devotion, such as chanting and hearing the book of the Lord, are transcendental forms of work beyond the modes of nature.
A question came up yesterday then. So if a devotee, when he's not chanting, does so-called ordinary work, let's say he's a householder and he has a profession, computer operator, he's operating a computer, then is that work in the mode of goodness? Or because he's involved in Bhajana Kriya, that would also be considered transcendental.
Yeah, that's my judgment. I can't think that somebody who's transcendental because he is his main goodness like that. Absolute knowledge is in the mode of goodness, knowledge based on duality, passion. Foolish materialistic knowledge, mode of ignorance. That is to say, knowledge is concerned with how to stay alive, get through the day without being killed or eaten. Knowledge based on me, however, is understood to be transcendental. That's clear enough, too. Residence in the forest is in the mode of goodness. Residence of town, mode of passion. Residence in a gambling house displays a quality of ignorance, and residence in a place where I reside is transcendental. The Lord's temple, places of pilgrimage, whatever. So there's always this fourth state. A worker free of attachment is in the mode of goodness. A worker blinded by personal desire, the mode of passion. A worker forgotten how to tell right from wrong is in the mode of ignorance. But a worker who has taken shelter of me is understood to be transcendental. So more than being
free from attachment, you have to have taken shelter of Krishna. Faith directed towards spiritual life is in the mode of goodness. Adhyatmiki, concerned with the Atma. Faith rooted in fruitive work, mode of passion. Faith residing in irreligious activities, mode of ignorance. The faith in my devotional service is purely transcendental. Then there's food here, which doesn't mention anything about transcendental food. Whatever's offered to Krishna. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification in the mode of passion. Happiness based on delusion and degradation is in the mode of ignorance. But that happiness found within me is transcendental. So those are Krishna's distinctions there between the three modes and also transcendental. Then he says, interestingly, 31, O best among the human beings, he's talking to Uddhava, all states of material being are related to the interaction of the enjoying soul, material nature. Whether seen, heard of, or only conceived within the mind, they are, without exception, constituted of the modes of nature. O gentle Uddhava, all these different phases of conditioned life arise from work, born of the modes of material nature. The living entity who conquers these modes, manifested from the mind, can dedicate himself to me by the process of devotional service and thus attain pure love for me. He uses the same Madhava, attains my same nature. So he suggests that those who are, therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in loving service to me. A wise sage, free from all material association and unbewildered, should subdue his senses and worship me. He should conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by engaging himself only with things in the mode of goodness. Here's an explicit structure of the sequence. One should first of all conquer the modes of passion. Then, being fixed in devotional service, yukta, being engaged in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the material mode of goodness by indifference towards the modes. That is, don't be attached to the mode of goodness. But at least the activities in the mode of goodness, if there's other things that need to be done. Just like Srila Prabhupada in remarked how happy he was in Vrindavan. He had his little bhajan kutir in a holy place. He had all his books. His life was complete. Everything was fine. But then he undertook all the trouble of coming to the West. And you may say that, all of a sudden things became very passionate. Prabhupada remarked in the introduction to the second volume of Srimad Bhagavatam that was published in India, how he's being criticized that here's this person in a sannyasi dress who's going around picking up money, going to the printers, going to the binders, going to the paper sellers, and just like some pound, shilling, pence man, just like a businessman. And he marked that this is all activity in the service of the Lord, and it is all done to increase glorification of the Lord, and therefore it's completely free from any material contamination. So if one says, oh, no, this is too passionate, this is too heavy, I've got to deal with money. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta, for example, violated the rules of sannyas when he rode in a motor car. We call it an automobile. They always call it a motor car. When he rode in a motor car, there's a famous picture of Bhaktisiddhanta in the back of a 1920s vintage automobile. He also wore sewn cloth, something else sannyasis never did. They undertook all these things that were considered materialistic. So one should not be averse to the service of Krishna. One should be indifferent to the modes. Thus pacified within his mind, the spirit soul, freed from the modes of nature, and gives up the cause of this conditioned life and attains me. Well, how does one become free from the modes of nature? He says by fully engaged in devotional service. It's by simply becoming extremely involved in Krishna, extremely attached and attracted to hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's the only way that one can actually become transcendental, even to the mode of goodness. So that's what he said. One gives up all his interest in the modes of nature whatsoever, just completely indifferent. Then finally, free from the subtle conditioning of the mind and from the modes of nature, born of material consciousness, the living entity becomes completely satisfied by experiencing my transcendental form. He no longer searches for enjoyment in the external energy, nor does he contemplate or remember such enjoyment within himself. That's how the chapter ends there. Okay. Any questions about this?
Yeah. One thing that I've seen is that almost contradictory, not so much contradictory, it's been like a running controversy. Even though we're engaged in devotional service, how much particular activities or certain locations or certain associations affecting us. Even in Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna book, for example, the story is given, I believe, in Kriyamuni. Who wants to find out who is the most superior? And he carries on this test to the point of actually kicking Lord Krishna in the chest. And you can tell that both even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to some extent were influenced by the modes of the transcendental personality. And so there's a conflict there. Actually, it's a running conflict. So many devotees stay in the cities and preach or to the car. So they move outside and work in the name of trying to establish another service resource or work with the temple. How to resolve that?
What's the conflict? That is, if you remain in a city, for example, or a place like that, although you're serving Krishna, you may also be affected by?
Definitely.
No, I don't think it's definite. I don't think that's the case.
So you would say that it's not actually a difference in working in New York?
Well, it depends. You know, if by staying and working in New York, you are getting affected by the most material nature all the time, and how do you do that in a place? You can go and be involved in New York City preaching Krishna consciousness or any other place like that if you're really intensely engaged in Krishna consciousness. I mean, that really has to be your main interest and involvement in life. In other words, in order not to succumb to material enjoyment, there just has to be a certain amount of investment, time, hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on. A certain amount of time and energy has got to go into it. If that goes into it, then it's relatively easy not to succumb to the temptations of material life. Why? Because you have another life. You have an emotional life with Krishna that develops when there's hearing and chanting and deity worship or whatever. And you're engaged. I mean, you're locked in. And that protects you from being attracted to other things. The problem is, if you're not that involved in it, and then you're also in a lot of material association, then you're liable to succumb to it. So then you can take one of two courses, I suppose. Either you really have to hook up your hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on. And if it doesn't look like you can do that right away, then you should definitely transport yourself to a safer place, you know, where you want to avoid temptation. You know, you here in Port Royal, you may have to drive 20 miles for sense gratification instead of just going around the corner. You know, so it may make it a little harder on yourself. Although if you're really intent on sense gratification, you'll manage anywhere, anyway. You know, it's amazing what you can do if you just really want to. But if you find that you can't do that yet, if you're too affected by the modes, then definitely go for the mode of goodness. Save yourself. The usual conflict is management wants you to stay in New York City, etc., and do this thing. But management has to work out for the welfare of the devotees. And management has to learn that if it takes care of the devotees, not automatically everything else will be taken care of. And that if for the sake of getting things done, so that the devotees that are in the cities, they really have to be given sufficient facility to be able to bear up under the friction of passion and ignorance of modern urban life.
Well, I wasn't thinking per se just the temptation, but there's like a certain aspect, almost liability. That particular story exemplified how there are certain influences there associated with the world and different places that the devotees feel like they're on them. For example, going to Vrindavan on the service, it leads one a whole other almost personality to the devotees. So they can feel these different influences. Still, outside the immediate definition,
because you could go and stay there the rest of your life and the service to do elsewhere. And Prabhupada certainly didn't want everybody to go. My feeling is there's a certain amount of protection that's available in doing your duty wherever you take you. And that as one advances, one ought to be able to internalize Vrindavan to a certain degree. But it requires your own judgment, you know, that we may need that kind of spiritual restoration that's involved. Not everybody goes to Vrindavan and comes out that way either. I don't know what the statistics actually are, but if you go to Vrindavan, not be there, right?
The flip side to that, though, in other words, to make a step towards Vrindavan, cancels not only spiritual quality, but just a better idea of the culture, more goodness, more permanent. But the flip side of that is what the boys are doing, moving outside, getting a job. That's the other side of it. At what point do you, okay, I'm going to go worry about my family, go get a job, in spite of my abilities. It's not per se a necessary contradiction.
No, of course it isn't. One just has to learn how to do it and do it in Krishna consciousness. So these are like practical skills that have to be that have to be developed, that require good discrimination, require judgment.
Even beyond that, if to some extent these things have been resolved in some way,
sure, they have to. If they want to be Krishna conscious, they have to. Yeah, it's necessary.
Situation also goes is the motive to somebody, for example, in the area of a city town, so they like somewhere, they don't like to be like, for example, in complete isolation. Of course, if there's not association, it's not a good situation. If they're on set, it's not a part where there's much association.
We should avoid the modes of material nature 100%. I don't think anyone can say, well, now I'm going to go into modes of passion for a little while until I make some money. You know, once you learn how to make some money without falling into the mode of passion. I mean, no devotee should actually think that, because saying I'm going to go into the modes of material nature is saying now, for the sake of my Krishna consciousness, I'm going to be in Maya. How's that possible?
Well, working with those energies.
But that's not being in the modes. That's the whole point. Arjuna, you know, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was not in the modes, although he was definitely working with those energies, as you put it, you know. And Prabhupada said it's not possible to fight a battle without getting angry. So he's involved. That's the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita, is that if you're doing your work for Krishna without any attachment to the results, without any expectation of a return, purely for the sake of satisfying Krishna, then you're not touched at all by the modes of material nature.
Yeah. Also, in your answer before, you were saying that, like, if you find that you're weak, then definitely go for the mode of goodness. And that was consistent with my understanding that, like, for instance, if you find that in the city you're tempted to do things that you know are very destructive to your Krishna consciousness, then you're talking about things in the mode of ignorance and passion. If you remove yourself to the country to, you know, a farm here or something, then you're likely to succumb to the mode of goodness, and that, you know, you're still in the same weakened condition, but at least the mode of goodness is more likely to promote some future development of your Krishna consciousness.
That's right.
So, why is that different than the Arjuna?
Because, you know, Krishna had another plan. And that was Krishna's point, that is, like, you follow my orders, you will be contaminated. And that was his point. You follow my orders, you will be contaminated. And anyway, that going to the forest was not so much in the mode of goodness. Anyway, he thought it was. But for him, it was being attached to not doing his duty, which is definitely not renunciation.
Maybe you can talk about, you know, Srila Prabhupada gave some instructions for householders, you know, for distribution, and it seems like, you know, there wasn't a big effort to really develop those. It creates a lot of other activities which one may have to do in association with materialism or activities that
talking about economic activities for maintaining a household.
Yeah, you know, different types of sales, you know, sales that would require, you know, rocket activity. So how can we see that as transcendental and anxious, you know, sort of a deviation from what Prabhupada actually instructed, because it is a little more difficult to distribute books or other things Prabhupada instructed over.
Prabhupada did not instruct that you shouldn't, you know, what Prabhupada instructed is what it says, honest means of livelihood. What Prabhupada said, however, is that it's not very good to have to work for a non-devotee. It's very hard to be employed by or in a company with non-devotees who maintain their Krishna consciousness. But it's not that Prabhupada said the only occupations for householders are book distribution, prasadam distribution.
I'm not saying the only, but you concentrated on it.
Well, that would be really nice. That would be really nice to do. He says, book distribution, that is also selling, that is vaishya. It's in one place. Yeah, you think of it as brahminical, but Prabhupada said that one, you know that he said, it's vaishya.
Yeah, it was in the Taliban. They asked, and what about the book distributors? Who will do that? That's a vicious
So, but anyway, this, these, you know, there's some occupational duties we'd like to see flourish, but it's a little difficult to capitalize brand new things. So for a time, we have to do occupational duties that we don't like to do. Like selling schlock art and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I love something.